Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast, the Good Morning Pride edition, episode two. We're bringing back our inaugural guest, Ryan Matthews, for episode two as well. We are, you know, going to knock out another one of these shorter podcasts for the Lions fans, and we're going to try and give you something to listen on your commute or on your way, whatever it is that you need to do to pass the time and get your Lions content. We're hoping that we can satisfy your hunger for Lions content. So welcome, Ryan. How you doing, buddy?
Oh man, I'm doing great. I'm back. I'm so happy to be here again. And I'm so happy to throw more draft questions at you so that all of us can learn more.
Hey, you know, we're still working it out, like the details on how this thing's gonna play out here. And so I'm happy that we're kind of shaping this little podcast platform here into a fun episode, hopefully. And as always, I'm gonna as always, we've done this once before, but as the plan is, you're the guest, so you get to pick the topic that we talk about. So again, I'll hand it over to you, and I'll let you tell me what we're going to talk about today.
This is fun, man. You know, and this is the thing that I used to love about the podcast too, is that I get to come up with all these like dumb little fun games. But as the teacher in me would always expect, there's got to be some educational component to it. So so we're gonna do a little game of buy or sell. And
all right. Explain the rules to me one more time.
Okay, yeah. So I'm going to throw out these statements, and they're statements, they're hypothetical situations, things that might happen on draft day, either day one, day two. We'll just talk about the NFL draft in general. But with these statements, do you buy that this is a thing that you could see happening on draft day, or are you selling the notion that I'm putting out there for you? Okay.
All right. I always get these mixed up, so bear with me and excuse any of my errors. I don't know why I don't know why I struggle with this concept. But I will do my best. Hopefully my explanation will save me.
Yeah. Eric, you are investing in the NFL draft. Are you buying this idea or are you selling it? All right. Brad Holmes picks a player at 29. Are you buying that or are you selling that? Is Brad Holmes going to
stay put?
Take a player at 29? Are you buying that or are you selling that?
Sell. Because he doesn't. He rarely stays put, right?
I love it.
Like his last three first round picks, he's traded. Oh, wait, no. Was the Jack Campbell one a trade? No, that one was the original. That was where the Lions picked at 18. Shoot. All right. Two of the last three. he's traded, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to say he doesn't stay put. Geez. So yeah, the Jack Campbell one, he just took Campbell because Campbell was far and away the best guy. I traded back for Gibbs, traded up for JMO, and stayed put for Aiden because that's what you do when you have the second pick. So,
well, also tried to move up in the 2021 draft, tried to move up from 7 and Penei Sewell to see, hey, what's it going to cost to move up and grab Ja'Marr Chase?
I still think they might have been trying to move up to get Sewell, but that's just me. But yes, he was exploring that idea. So of his 5 first round picks, he's traded for 2 of them. I still think that's odds. That's enough odds to say, yeah, I think he's probably going to move, especially when we saw the wheeling and dealing last year. He traded almost every pick. It felt that way. So I'm going to say, I'm going to say, I don't think he stays at 29.
All right. Well, that dovetails nicely into our second statement here. Buy or sell, Eric, Brad Holmes doesn't make a pick in the first round of the 2024 NFL draft.
Sell. He has to make a pick. It's in Detroit. I know everyone wants to trade back and get capital, and that's fine. And I get that, but like he is aggressive in wanting to get players. And as we talked about in episode one of this series, like if he has a guy that he thinks is there and that's his one of his last few first round games or whatever, that guy's graded much higher than the next group of players, he's going to go get them. So I think he goes up sets the draft stage on fire, and the crowd erupts as he trades up to go get some guy, and it looks like it, and it ends up being a steal.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you.
Okay, all right. So you're selling that? Are you selling both? Or what? Well, I didn't. What was your first one?
Well, you know, Holmes picking a player at 29. I'm with you on that. I'm selling it. I think that the guy just loves to move around the draft board, and right. I have to sell that notion that he's going to just stay put and pick a player at 29 because of, you know, that the on our first iteration of this podcast, we talked a lot about, you know, that bucket of players who we thought for sure was going to go. I don't know if Brad Holmes will even be able to contain himself and wait for all those players to go. You know what I mean? If one of those guys is one of his first round grade guys and he loves the fit and he loves the player, I have no doubt in my mind that he would move up. And you know, Brad Holmes not making a pick in the first round, would it be disappointing? Yes. If it's good business, if there's a Godfather offer that comes along, Eric, and it pulls him out of the first round, I would like to think that Brad Holmes would, you know, call the dogs off and wouldn't be so aggressive. But I'm gonna sell that too. I'm with you. I think he does ultimately make a pick in the first round, just not at 29. So,
all right, let me chime in.
Sure.
I'm gonna ask you a buy or sell now.
Oh, okay.
As,
yeah.
As a follow up question to this. Okay, last 2 years, he's picked at number 12. Does he trade up to 12 this year?
Oh, man. If he's moving up to 12.
It's a big jump. He's done it from 32, so it's possible he will do it from 29, right? So would he jump up to 12? Or will he jump up to 12?
Yeah, man, this is... So the first thing that runs through my mind when you ask me that question is, who's the player? And right. maybe even in a broader sense, what position do they play? Because I understand moving up to 12 for a player like Jameson Williams, because the whole lead up to the draft, Eric, we went back and forth about
how he was wide receiver one. Yep.
He's wide receiver one without the injury, right?
Yep.
It, you know, Chris Olave, mm-hmm. same draft, right? Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, like, you know, Drake Lund, any of those guys, be damned. Like, Jameson Williams is the guy.
All right. Rome Odunze falls to 12.
I know.
Trade up to 12. Would you do it? Would he do it? Like, I'm just scenarios here.
I could see him taking a wide receiver at 12. Absolutely. Brad Holmes loves wide receivers.
He does. He loves skill players. Right?
Brad Holmes loves wide receivers. It doesn't matter if it's Jameson Williams or if it's Trinity Benson.
All right, flip it over. Quinyon Mitchell, top corner in the draft, is there at 12. Brad Holmes.
Yeah.
Did he trade him? Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think for Quinion, I'd do it.
It's another premium position though. And I think that's the point of the whole, yeah, move up for Jameson Williams. The Gibbs thing is a little bit interesting because it's a move back, right? Yeah. And I think we're all kind of under the assumption that Devin Witherspoon got pulled right out from underneath you.
100%.
Much like a SB Nation podcast, but
too soon.
Is that too soon? I would buy that. I would buy Brad Holmes moving up to 12 to take a wide receiver or to take a cornerback, an offensive lineman. Oh boy, that's a little bit spicier.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to do that because if it's a tackle, that guy's not going to play yet. It would make sense with a tackle because you don't know what Taylor Decker's future is. Excuse me. But it doesn't make sense to trade up to 12 if your guy's not going to play the whole season. At least with JMO, you knew he was coming back at some point, right?
Sure. And the Lions had a need at wide receiver, right? They had Amon-Ra St. Brown, but at that point they had only had what? You know,
that was it.
Eight really good games of Amon-Ra St. Brown where it was like, we might have something.
Yeah, probably less actually, but yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. So,
Mitchell is kind of the guy I think. If he's there, I could see them. Okay. Here's another buy or sell.
Okay.
Each of the last 2 years, Brad Holmes has drafted the Alabama player who wears the jersey number one. It was Gibbs 2 years or last year. It was JMO the year before. This year, Alabama player that wears number one is Kool-Aid McKinstry. Does Brad Holmes keep his tradition alive and draft Alabama jersey number one for the third year in a row?
I love all these, man. This is definitely tickling a good spot for me. Kool-Aid feels like the guy who keeps on getting mocked to the Lions at 29, right?
Yeah.
Is that a guy you feel like he could for sure go before 29?
I think he could, especially when he showed 4.4 speed at his pro day. Most were expecting him to run a little bit, I think sub four or after more than four, like a 4.5.
Yeah.
Showed a little bit more.
Yeah, with that though, like, is that a guy that Brad Holmes would move up 4 or 5 spots for? Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, yeah. Again, it's a premium position. It's a premium position where the Lions don't have a ton of stuff down the road, right? They don't have a ton of players that, I mean, who's really that developmental player at cornerback that they have right now? For a while, it was Fatu Melifonwu, and then he started playing safety.
Yeah. Stephon Gilmore, right? Like, I mean, maybe, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Blending those two together, they took both Gibbs and Jamo at pick 12. So I don't think they would trade up to 12 to get McKinstry, but you know, it is there are some interesting consistencies from the last 2 years with those you know, Alabama players and picking at 12. So interesting thought processes. Yeah. These are things I think about sometimes that.
you might also want to consult Mike Payton and see what phase the moon is going to be in, because if all of those line up,
then maybe
we have something there.
Well, like the eclipse is past us, so I don't know how that influenced the draft. if the eclipse was on, if it was on round one that day, I would be, all right, they're taking Kool-Aid at 12 and that's the end of the day. Yeah. But
you can write up the article and get ready to post, right?
I might even publish it ahead of time just with that level of confidence. But the moon phased through a couple weeks earlier, so
yeah,
I think that rules that out.
Let me hit you with one here. Brad Holmes picks more offensive players than he does defensive players in this draft, buy or sell?
People are going to hate this. I'm buying it. I think I think it's going to be just a tick, but I think they could, of his seven players, I could see four being offensive players, 100%. I could see it being four defense as well. I mean, I'm not ruling out, but I absolutely buy that's a realistic possibility.
Yeah. And to outline those positions, wide receiver would certainly be one of them.
Yeah. Interior offensive line and offensive tackle, both of them, right?
There you go. Right there. Yeah. I don't even think you want to discount the idea of a late round tight end, even with bringing Brock Wright back, because I think that there's an opportunity to be had for tight end three. You know me, Eric, nobody loves James Mitchell more than I do in Detroit.
Yeah.
But what have we really seen from James Mitchell?
We've seen
little flashes and bright spots here and there, but
sure. He's never dropped a pass thrown his way in the NFL, though. I got to tell you that much.
but it wouldn't shock me if on day three, Lions take a tight end. Why not?
All right. New special teams rules, the way it's set up, it very much lends itself to bigger body athletes who can block. That's tight ends, right? Keeping four tight ends, I think, is 100% happening. I think they're going to keep four. So even if you like James Mitchell, drafting another guy to challenge Zylstra, absolutely. I think it's drafting a tight end is a real possibility. And I wouldn't be surprised by it at all.
Buy or sell, Eric, Brad Holmes doesn't draft an offensive lineman on day one or day two.
Mm.
Buy or sell?
Sell. I think they have to come away with one. I think the talent is too good. Like with offensive linemen, college programs do such a poor job of developing offensive linemen. To be able to draft an offensive lineman and get him into your system for a year is huge. And then to be able to have, you know, a potentially have a starting role for them a year from now, it could be huge. So, and then you add in the fact that this group is talented enough that some of these guys are ready to challenge to start right off the bat, then that just makes it even better. So the quality of offensive linemen in this class is high, and the incentive to get a guy into your system so he's ready a year from now because of the college systems is even as high as well. So it absolutely, with the offensive line being the strength of your program, the strength of your offense, which is the strength of your team, everything centers around the offensive line. This is the time to take a guy and prepare him for a starting role.
Yeah. Two things to those great points. One, Lions did that last year. They grabbed Colby Sorstall, get him in the door. He's from a smaller school. Let's get him in the program. Let's have him make that transition from tackle to guard. Took some time. Yeah. There was a period of baptism by fire, you know, where he had to step in. But you don't want to be caught with your pants down in the NFL like that, right? Like there's no shame in drafting a guy who, to your point, Eric, get a guy in the door who could push to start. The Lions aren't worried about that at all. Right. This is a regime and this is a coaching staff that loves and preaches competition, right? They love that stuff. They will invite that to their facilities. And I don't want to sell this. I don't want to sell that the Lions the Lions don't draft an offensive lineman on day one or day two. I don't see it happening. I think it goes back to our discussion too that we had earlier on the first podcast.
There's a negative in there that's throwing me off. Let's be clear. Think they will draft one, right?
I think they will.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Yes. I agree with you. Just to clarify. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you sold it. You sold it. Holmes doesn't draft an offensive lineman day one or day two. We're both selling it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Get that out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
Geez. There's a lot of guys. I mean, realistically, there's a lot of interior players that I think could start like on an NFL roster as a rookie, but to be able to get them in and not have to play them would be a massive luxury, like just massive.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guys that can do it. Like, see, like with Colby, like you mentioned, he had both the transition from a small school to the NFL plus the transition from guard to tackle or tackle to guard. And they also cross-trained him both at left and right, and they gave him centers. Like, it's a big ask. Like, he's while he played last year, he played out of necessity more than he played because I think he was ready. And he is a very self-aware young man. Like, I talked to him after every game, and he is a guy who very much understands where he is. Right. Like if he had a bad game and I went to talk to him, he had a big smile on his face and he was like, well, that didn't go the way I wanted it to. Like he was like, it's like, you know, I'm trying to figure it out. I'm still in my learning process. I felt good here. I felt good here. I felt this play was good. But like, he's like, I'm still learning. Like, and he's very self-aware of that. And so I don't think he's going to be ready to start, but I do think he's a guy who has that upside with more time. He just needs more time. He needs more reps. He needs more experience. But again, I think he's extraordinarily self-aware of that. So I'm excited to see where his future goes. But in the interim, you have to have an insurance plan for Zeitler. You have to have an insurance plan for Graham, because being at the ages that they are in the NFL world as offensive linemen, like their shelf life, it could just end at any point. Like, that's just how the NFL works. It's a cruel business, and sometimes players just disappear quickly. And you've got to have
look
a plan.
No further than Frank Ragnow, right? Look no further than Frank Ragnow and the injuries that he's dealt with, and him just being the toughest dude that I feel like I've watched play football.
100%. Yeah. I'm with you 100%. He played with a broken neck, fractured neck. He's like, oh, I'm good. I can't make the calls though this week. So Jared, you're going to have to make the calls, but
yeah. And to that point too, though, Eric, about, you know, Colby starting out of necessity.
Yeah.
That was a spot where the Lions did not feel like they were going to ever get into because they signed Graham and he was their swing guy, right? They thought that they were going to get a healthy Vitae back into that lineup, and it was going to be Vitae and it was going to be Jonah, and you had Graham as insurance. And then before you knew it, Graham was starting, and then they dealt with injuries to Jonah and they dealt with injuries to Frank, and Graham had, you know, moving around all those pieces. The Lions don't want to get stuck in that spot again. So yeah. I definitely see them addressing it at some point on day one or day two.
It's interesting when you study the Lions offensive line, because their left side is a little bit more technical and the right side is a little bit more bullyish, right? Like they're bullies on the right side, technical on the right side. It just Sewell's just the freak of nature that he is that can do everything, right? And so it's just, he's the best tackle in the NFL, right? Or on his way to being that. And the addition of Graham, I think, in its you know, forethought, was to keep him as an option, allow him to challenge, but they really wanted Vitae because they really wanted that big bully. And when Vitae couldn't do it, they turned to Graham, and then Graham just played exceptional. And that's why they got him. That's why they went out and signed him. But bringing Graham back, I think, made losing Jonah a lot more palatable to them, because they said, I can now take this finesse player who played one of the best years of his career, flip him over to the left side, put him in between his two best friends, and then go sign that bully to play right guard. And that's what they got. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach this draft, because will they be looking for a bully or will they be looking for a technician? In my opinion, I think they're looking for a bully. I think they need the guy who can be the butt kicker, who is going to like just try and beat the guy up across from him. And they have those guys. Graham Barton is a popular pick to Detroit, but he's not as a bully as much as he is just a multifaceted technician. He's more Graham Glasgow than Zeitler to me. Whereas a guy like Powers Johnson is very much that bully mentality. Zach Frazier, bully mentality. Cooper Beebe, bully mentality, right? Like, and so I see how those guys fit a lot easier. Now, I think Graham's great. I think Graham Barton is great. And he's going to be high on my board, and he's going to be a guy who maybe you take because he can play so many different positions. Maybe he's higher than a guy like Zach Frazier because he's talented and he can do so much more. But Frazier, BB, Howard Johnson, those guys, just straight bullies. Those are the guys that I think they're going to be looking at. Obviously, because I think Fuaga and Fatiana were probably off the board, but Powers Johnson, Frazier, Beebe, Christian Haynes, right? Like he's another, like guys that can bully people at right guard. I think that's what they're going to be looking for, in my opinion. Could they go with the athlete? Sure, they could, but the way they use their offensive line, I think they want another, they'd rather have a bully on that right side. And I think that's really the spot they need to look at more than the left side right now.
Well, speaking of spots that a lot of people are looking at from the outside, looking in at Detroit, everybody wants to pair Aiden Hutchinson with an edge rusher.
Oh, sure.
Everybody wants another player on the opposite side of Aiden Hutchinson so that, you know, some of the attention can be taken off of him. That discussion is neither here nor there. But I want to know, do you buy or sell this notion, Eric? Are the Detroit Lions going to draft an edge player in the 2024 draft?
I think it's, geez. I would say, I would sell it because I'm not sold that they absolutely have to take one. I think if the right guy is there, they will. But the circumstances that surround taking one, I think, is more of that being a luxury than a need. Okay. And I say that because I feel like they think they have good depth where they're at. They know that there's probably a spot to upgrade, especially for the long term on the edge. At the same time, the edge is a different animal in my book. There is a direct correlation to where you draft an edge rusher, or where you're able to draft an edge rusher, and that edge rusher's ability to be successful. Typically, the higher you draft them, the more successful they are. It's not 100% like foolproof or anything, but when you look at the successful edge rushers in the NFL, the majority of them, with the exception of Max Crosby, were all drafted in the first round and typically in the first half of the first round. So if an edge rusher's there at 29, he may not have enough upside, or he may not be as big of an impact guy that they would have to take. And then if you get out of the first round, the chances of you finding a Max Crosby beyond for the first round is extraordinarily rare. So now you're looking at a guy who's just a situational, or more of a rotational guy, or maybe just a backup. And so where they're at, in my opinion, if you're looking for a starting edge rusher, you need to be picking in the top half of the first round in order to get that guy. It's hard to find an edge rusher because they're so important to what a defense does that they often go off the board early. There are three defensive tackles that we've talked about. We talked about on the first episode, Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, and Latu. Those three guys are in the group at the top. None of them are probably going in the top 10, but all of them could be off the board before pick 15, because again, even though they're not top 10 level players, it's still a position of need, and they still can kind of fit into that role where they have that upside. A guy like Chop Robinson, Darius Robinson, like, they're not top half of the first round guys, and they're not guys that I think are going to be come in and immediately start and make an impact, that and you can count on them to make an impact. That's why they're kind of being talked about a little bit later. And so do you gamble? Like the Chop Robinson, Darius Robinson discussion is interesting to me, because Chop has all the athleticism in the world that says it's worth gambling on him because he has all those traits of a guy who should go in the top half of the first round. Yet the production is just not there. And because the reason he maybe drops down to 29 is because the production isn't there. And if you're Brad Holmes, do you recognize that a edge rusher with his talent typically isn't going to be at this spot, and you take him from a value standpoint? Or do you say the production's not there, and I that's a big, you know, red flag for me? And so I don't know. Darius Robinson, on the other hand, is almost exactly what they have in John Kaminsky and Josh Pascal. And he kind of fits. He's more plug and play. But again, do you need three guys that all are kind of operating in the same way, even though he might be better than them? I mean, you could talk me into that by saying he's better. So and you're getting him on a rookie deal for longer, so it's worth it. At the same time, how does that help you immediately when you have other guys? And maybe, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting debate between the Robinson guys and how Brad Holmes will value them.
Yeah. I think I keep going back to just look at the way that the roster has been constructed so far.
Mm-hmm.
It's Aiden Hutchinson, it's Josh Pascal, it's John Kaminsky. Mm-hmm. They like their guys to be able to set the edge, you know? And I think one of the prospects that I find to be really interesting, and I think a lot of the first round shine has worn off on him, even if it was just there briefly, but a guy like Marshawn Nealon from Western Michigan. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, you know, at 29, taking a lot of what you just said, Eric, about, you know, teams being so interested in going and getting those players because they are such a hot commodity. because they, you know, can just fundamentally change your defense in an instant, right?
Yeah.
Again, Marshawn Nealon, you put his measurables right next to Josh Pascal, and it's like looking in a mirror. They're both like these kind of undersized guys, you know, 6'3", 6'2" and a half, 200 and, you know, less than 270 pounds.
Yeah.
They win.
Inside out guys. Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. They win in the same way. If the Lions are interested in drafting a guy like that, don't you need to figure out what Josh Pascal has in year three? And Brad Holmes talks about that all the time, right? He talks about how important that third year is. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen it with a guy like Ifeatu Melifonwu, how important a third year is and going through the change from the NFL and changing positions and things like that.
Derek Barnes.
Yeah. Another great example. The Chop Robinson conversation is interesting to me because I feel like the Lions have tried to make Sam linebacker work, even though they don't have a Sam linebacker not named James Houston, right? Like, well, that seems like the only guy who fits that role. It's not Jack Campbell. That's not where Jack Campbell needs to be playing football. We figured that out in his rookie season, but it almost feels like why spend so much valuable draft capital on a guy like Chop Robinson when you have some NFL production to point to with James Houston, and you have a guy who costs next to nothing in James Houston to fit that situational role? That's kind of where I'm at with the edge position, I think.
Yeah, it's really, it's a hard one to predict because I think it kind of stands on its own. Like, kind of like you have to look at quarterback kind of separate to everybody else. With edge, I kind of view it that way. I look at it as if you have the opportunity to get a guy that you think is an impact player, you take him. And you take him even if you think you have a bigger need somewhere else. That's just kind of what edge is. And I don't know. I could see the appeal of a lot of the top guys. At the same time, I could also see them not seeing enough out of the top guys.
I got one more to throw at you before we get out of here.
All right.
Buy or sell? Yes. The Lions are walking out of the draft with Mike Sainstrill.
Oh, man. I don't like you.
I bring this up because I want you to buy or sell, but I also want I want to have you kind of wax poetically on something that I think we do see. I think we do see eye to eye on this.
Yes.
Okay. Bringing in a guy like Sainstrill is not redundant just because the Lions have Brian Branch.
Oh yeah. No, I agree. And look, there's starting to be some of their reports that are coming out of late. We've seen them looking at some other nickel corners in this draft class as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a pure nickel corner on this defense to back up Brian Branch. If there's an injury at safety, you don't have a backup safety. That would be Brian Branch. And then you move Brian Branch out, and all of a sudden you have a starting nickel role that you don't really have a clean answer for. You'd be moving like an outside guy or adding a pure nickel corner or a guy who can play nickel is 100% on the table for the Lions in this draft. So that means, you know, I think we talked about Cooper DeJean in the, previously, right? It's a guy like Mike Sainstrill. Mike Sainstrill, the thing with Mike is, and I'm trying to remember who said this on, I saw this online. The guy, oh God, he's a play-by-play guy for college football. I'm blanking on his name. Anyway, he tweeted out, Mike Sainstrill was the best player on the best defense in the college football last year. And it's 100% true. Like they had the top defense and Mike was the guy. And he has only played defense for 3 years because actually I think it's two. He's only been like a starter for two because he played wide receiver before that. And he only switched over because Harbaugh said, oh, we don't have enough corners. And Mike said, well, I don't know, I'll give it a shot. I'll try and help you out. He was going to go both ways. And then they were like, all right, you're really good at nickel. Why don't you just stay there? He is just scratching the surface of the player that he is or the player he can be. And he is wildly undersized compared to what you want, a position versatile player to be. Like he's 5'9 and a half, 182 pounds, right? Like we talked about previously about Cooper DeJean being able to play multi positions all over, but he's over 6 feet and he's 205 pounds, right? Like Cooper's a bigger guy. Mike's shorter and lighter, and but he still plays physical, but he's, you have to take that size component into play. But Mike, he can play zone. He can play man. He can, you might be able to teach him safety. You can put him at any of the interior spots. You can keep him up closer to the box. Like there's a lot of different things that you can do with Mike that makes him a valuable player that is not redundant. It's kind of like how we talked about CJ GJ and Brian Branch living on the field at the same together. You can, this is what you're getting. You're getting a guy, a player that could play. Now, because of his size, I don't know if he goes in the first round. And I don't think he'll be there when the Lions are on the clock in the second round. So unless the Lions somehow end up picking like in the 40s or the late 30s, I have to sell that he ends up on a team. And I hate it. I hate it. Because I think he's 100% what they want in a player. And he fits. He's not redundant. Like it wouldn't, they're going to add, they're going to have to add a nickel corner in some fashion, in some way. He's the best nickel in this class. And I think he can do more. I just don't see, I don't think he's going to go in the first, and he's not going to be there. So unless they maneuver around and somehow end up picking, you know, in the early second round, he's probably going to end up somewhere else.
Well, you know, the one thing I think that I found interesting so far about studying the draft, where the Lions are at 29, I don't know if it's just because I'm mostly looking at players who are going to be available in orbit there, but it seems like there are just a lot of players from 29 to 45 that seem very intriguing to the Detroit Lions. He fits in that, you know, he fits in there. Grant Barton fits in there. Like there are tons of guys that I think fit right in that spot that are so interesting, and the Lions pick at 29 and 61. Like there's just such a gap that it feels like there's going to be a way that Brad Holmes maybe bridges that gap, and maybe he walks away with a guy like Mike, and you know, Michigan fans are very happy.
Oh,
and Lions fans should be very happy too.
Oh yeah. I have the same level of passion for him that I had for Brian Branch. But they're different players. They're different players. Like I had Branch's size, impact, instincts, the position he plays, the versatility. Like I had Branch as the 12th best player in last year's draft. Like I was super high on Branch. Mike has limitations. He's an off the ball guy. You're not blitzing Mike and expecting him to get home. Like you're playing him off the ball. You're letting him cover. He's not going to be scared of tight ends. He's not going to be scared of running backs. He's not going to be scared of guys going over the middle. But he's an off the ball guy. And at his size, being off the ball, I don't know if he can get in, you know, now I say this and watch like San Fran draft him at like pick 31. Right. And I like that would just annoy the crap out of me, but like, I'd love to put him up there. Like I am head over heels. I think he's one of the best players I in this class, probably my favorite player to watch in this class. I love everything about him. Find a way, Brad.
Hey, thanks for playing this game with me, buddy.
Oh, thank you. Let's close it out. Thank you. We got two episodes down. We're going to keep this, like I said, we're going to keep this train going. I'm going to have some other Pride of Detroit guests on here. We'll see who else we can get in. There's lots of red tape and different things, but I'll try and get a couple surprise guys on here as well. And we'll talk about something completely different. Maybe we'll talk about draft with somebody else. Maybe we'll do some film breakdown. I don't know. Well, it's up to the guest, right? So, thanks, Ryan. I appreciate you helping me kick this series off with the first two episodes. And until next time, let's go Lions.